Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord I beat the case. That man be calling.
It is Friday, November. Or November, Christ. I got my months mixed up. It is December 3rd. Let's get to the show. Oh man, we got a lot to talk about. Championship weekend. I'm really excited about the main show that was gonna come out yesterday, but I'm sitting here breaking it down and I'm like, this is too good to rush it. I mean, the Georgia Alabama breakdown that I did yesterday is gonna be phenomenal. At least I think so, but what do I know? And then I'm excited to talk about Michigan and you know their real chance in these playoffs, because I think they get the win, but don't want to spoil the main show. But anyways, I'm really excited about it. So that'll be out today, probably around lunchtime. Make sure you check that out. Before we get going, if you haven't seen, Chris and I have been tracking it ever since we kind of expanded and developed the platform. The show is back to hitting the charts. And if you guys remember, longtime listeners, when the show first came out, I mean, it was getting as high as like top 10 in the world when it came to sports. And then slowly after about a year, it just fell off the charts. And we still did great numbers, still did unbelievable listens. But there's something to these algorithms, right, with how they rank things. And we're learning, we're figuring them out. So if you could help us, here's how you get the show ranked higher, right? One is leave us a 5-star review and drop us a comment. We're doing a mailbox Friday today with 5 questions that we got in those 5-star reviews. So if you have a question for the show, every Friday we'll do it. Leave us 5 stars and drop us your question, or just drop us a great show or whatever, or the show sucks, I don't care. Whatever you put, just leave 5 stars. That's one way. Another way is to make sure you listen quickly. When the show comes out, listen when it comes out. Because the quicker you listen, the more it counts, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then
it's like weighted grades almost.
Yeah, right. And then also if you could share the show every time the link is copied. If you hit share and then you text it to someone, that bumps us up in the algorithm. It's crazy how the world works with YouTube and iTunes and Spotify. It's all like a formula based ranking. It's not just like, hey, a lot of people like this show. No. It's way deeper than that. So we're trying to get in the top 100. We got up in the top 150 yesterday. And then we'll put 2 shows out today. So if you guys could help us do that today, we will crack the top 100 this weekend. And you know, it's just another way for people to find us and notice it and see it. So if you could do that, appreciate it. That would be awesome.
And the higher we get, the more menacing stuff we can do. Like the more pull we'll have, you know, the more people will get to hear the madness, the corruption, what's really going on in the college football world and the sports world in general, as you and I talk kind of off camera about doing more and more, which we want to, the higher that number gets, the more power punching ability we will have.
Oh, there's no doubt. And it comes down to listens equal revenue, and revenue mm-hmm. is, you know, we're reinvesting as much as the revenue as we can bring in into the platform and trying to grow. I mean, hiring personnel and expanding marketing, all that. So if you could do that for us, appreciate it. Also, last day, they'll be on sale until the college football playoff. But if you want the best bang for your buck, our Zone 6 Fund, which is going to scholarship inner city Columbus kids to develop and train at +2 University and with some private coaching and training. We have our championship board squares, and I put it out on Twitter. We got about 40 left. So we've already, you know, I think it pays out. It's going to pay out like $6,500 or $6,700. So we've already covered that. So we're not going to lose money on it, but every square we sell now is $100 into the fund. So if you could go on Venmo, Cameron Media, no space, no underscore, none of that. Just Cameron Media, $100. Go get a square. It pays out the first quarter, halftime, third quarter, and final score of all 5 conference championship games. Tonight is the first one in the Pac-12, and the other 4 are tomorrow. And then it'll pay out in the 3 college football playoff games and also the Ohio State bowl game. So there's 9 games, 4 chances to win per game. So 36 chances to win. If you hit any of them, you get your money back. And if you hit halftime or final score, you make money. And that's if you only hit one. We had one person that hit five on the Buckeye season square board. So chance to win some money and also chance to support a great cause. If you could do that, it's all over my social media, or just go Venmo Cameron Media, $100, and it'll get you right. And Chris, I wanted to mention this before we keep going. There's a new podcast that's coming out. It's called The Recount. It's The Long Game with LZ and Leach. It's a guy, LZ Granderson and Will Leach. They talk the world of sports, politics, a bunch of it's bigger than just sports. And it's a really good podcast. I got turned on to it. I checked it out and I really like it. New episodes are out every Wednesday. If you guys are interested in another podcast, or you can go to therecount.com and check it out. Just take a look, check it out for me. See if you like it. I really think it's a different podcast. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not like this one, and it's not like the mainstream stuff you hear. So it's definitely something to check out. And while you're in the Christmas spirit, in the giving mood of supporting us, go ahead and make sure you hit a follow on Twitter at Menace to Sports and Instagram at Menace to Sports, trying to grow those two platforms. We are focused on growth in the holiday season. So if you could help us grow, however you could help, one, by following, two, by reviewing our show, and three, by telling people about it, sharing it, text it to your family group chat, and check this out, or your friends group. We would appreciate it.
Yeah, and keep our intern busy. Interact with the Menace to Sports Twitter page, because that keeps it busy, and we love kind of talking, getting questions. And a lot of the stuff that happens on there, we end up bringing to the show to discuss in full. And we've got a lot to discuss today, Zach.
A lot to discuss. And the number one thing we're going to discuss is Brian Kelly, the chameleon, or the phony, whatever you want to call it. It's funny because I always learned, and Urban Meyer used to say this when I was real young, and when I first took over the receiver room at Florida, he felt like I was kind of trying to be like him too much, right? And he pulled me aside and he was like, listen, players see through any ounce of bullshit. If you have the slightest amount of bullshit, or you're putting on a show, or you're not acting like yourself, they see right through it and you lose all credibility. He was like, don't go up in front of a room and try to coach like I coach, or coach like someone else coaches. And he used to talk about Jim Haycock would, when he first got the Illinois State job, he said the biggest problem he had was he was always being someone he wasn't, right? He would act like Earl Bruce one day, or he would act like, I can't remember who else he worked for, but he would act like other coaches instead of himself. And he said that's ultimately why it wasn't successful at Illinois State. And that was a lesson I learned from an early age, because players are smart. I mean, they see through it and they're like, what is this fucking clown doing? And the unbelievable, my guy Brian Kelly's been in Louisiana for like 3 days, and he's already got a Creole Southern accent. He's talking like a Louisianian. How do you say it?
Louisianian.
Sure, that works. We'll call it that. But I want to play. Somebody mashed up a clip of him talking to the team, Notre Dame team, before he left, talking about how they will always be a family to him. And then, like 36 hours later, at a basketball game, saying the same word "family" in front of the crowd. And listen to the difference. Just listen to this.
My life, for me and my family, being here at Notre Dame.
It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana. But
wild.
That dude had one sip of some Louisiana water and one sniff of a crawfish and changed his life entirely.
I mean, changed entirely who he is. I saw people putting up the water boy assistant coach. It's like, what happened? Like in 2 days, he became like a Southern, thick Southern accented coach. And just, God, you talk about an idiot. Like,
and
why?
That's something we had the question about a couple days ago, is will he be able to recruit down there if these players can see through like a super phony act? Now, I think that the LSU, you know, college football team is enough of like a cult atmosphere that he should be able to tie up the state. But oh my goodness, what's wrong with Buddy? Like, did he think that nobody would notice?
It's ridiculous, right? And you saw, like you think about when Nick Saban went to LSU or down at Alabama, when he talks to the team, like, he's genuine. Like, you may not like him, he's an asshole, but he doesn't switch up who he is. And that reminded me so much of Butch Jones. That was Butch Jones's whole thing. Like, he was trying to be Urban Meyer so bad that we would put out things. We would start a program, Real Life Wednesdays, or we'd do something on a visit. And then not 2 weeks later, Butch Jones is doing the same thing, just mimicking, copying. And it's, don't get me wrong, every coach steals ideas, right? Mm-hmm. You see something, you go, that's smart as shit. But then you have a genuine approach to it, right? Like, when when I if I saw something really cool, I'd be like, ooh, I need to do that. Yeah. But then I would do it my own way with my own personality, and I would be genuine. Where Butch Jones was always phony, always a facade. It was always bullshit. Like, it was just, it was like a character, right? You're out in Hollywood. And that's what Brian Kelly is, right? You saw it with the way he left Notre Dame, the fact he left Notre Dame, like the comments he made a week before about echoing Mike Tomlin's sentiments that it would take a blank check for $250 million to get me to leave. And it's like, eh, no, it wouldn't, obviously.
it was Black Friday, half off.
Right, right. It was just phoniness. And players see through it, fans see through it, and it's all well and good until you start losing.
Mm-hmm.
It would happen with Eddie O, Les Miles, huge, huge phony dude. I mean, he was trying to be Bo Schembechler. You could see it how he talked, right? The way he wore his hat was just was lame. Like, just players see through that shit. And when things start to not go your way, you get fired. You lose the team. Like, you lose all credibility. You lose a game, and they're like, this phony motherfucker here. You know what I mean? Like, it, you lose everything. And Brian Kelly's already up to no good. He's already doing it. And it's just, it's a shame, because I really think he's a good football coach, but he's just not a real dude, a fucking man. You know what I mean? That's like, I don't give a shit what you think about me. Like, I'm going to be me, and I'm going to coach you hard. I'm going to teach you a lot, and you're going to get better. That's what players want, in case you're wondering. And this is Urban's big deal. Players want to know that you're making them better, mm-hmm. right? It starts with competency and trust. Like, do they think you're a great football coach and you actually know what you're talking about? Do they trust you that you have, you know, their development and best interest in mind? And if you get those two things in your corner, those fucking players will listen to anything you say. Because ultimately, what? They want to get better, and they don't want to be bullshitted. That's the formula to being a great coach right there. I just gave it to you. Be competent as shit. Study mm-hmm. your fucking X's and O's, your technique, your position, your expertise, your specialty, and then just be genuine. Build a relationship. Spend time with the kid, the kids, the group, right? And let them see you as a real person and that you're not phony, and they will follow you anywhere. And right. Brian Kelly's already off to a rough start.
And when you have that, Zach, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it makes it a little bit easier to have a 2-loss or 3-loss season if you're like a national championship contender, like going into the season, because the thing doesn't fall apart. Things that are faulty made, things with a faulty foundation, when those losses start coming, there are going to be people coming for you. But if you're the most prepared in the room, if you study your shit, and if you, you know, have built this genuinely out of love, then there will be less concerns about having a 2-loss or 3-loss team. Now, if you build it the other way and it's fake and it's phony, then when the wheels fall off, there's no spare tires in the back.
Like, no, I think it's all the foundation, right?
Absolutely.
It's a house built in sand or a house built in concrete. That's what mm-hmm. it is. And if you face adversity, if you built the program with a concrete foundation, you can survive it, right? If you build it in sand, that's when the whole thing turns to shit.
And going to the SEC, it needs to be built the right way. Absolutely. Like,
oh my God.
In the SEC, if you do not build it correctly, we have seen plenty of good coaches go there and just get their shit knocked out, because how it goes, because football's really different down there. I was curious, sticking kind of with the Notre Dame theme and Brian Kelly. Do you know who Notre Dame has on the schedule next year?
Ohio State.
Not just them. They also have Clemson.
Ooh.
And they have USC.
Oh boy.
So.
Marcus Freeman is in the building. He was officially announced. I feel like he's been announced as the head coach like 5 times.
Yep.
But this morning I saw Notre Dame tweeted it out that it's official. He's the 45th head coach at Notre Dame. And there was one sports media person that I can't remember who it was. I might have to put it on the main show as a dumbass sports media personality of the week that tweeted out like, congratulations to Marcus Freeman. He's the youngest coach in Notre Dame history and the first black head coach. And someone responded with a picture of Tyrone Willingham. Like, huh? Do we forget Tyrone? It was not that long ago, right?
Yeah. And it's not like he's irrelevant currently, because anyone who follows college football knows that, guess what?
It's wild. It was in the 2000s. Like, we're not talking about in the early 90s. There was a black head coach that you forgot about, right? I mean, Tyrone Willingham was there in like 2003 or something. Like, what?
And isn't he on the committee as well right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's definitely a very, very relevant person. Zach, it is Friday. I do want to dig into some mailbox stuff and then also some DC stuff, because we had that poll yesterday about, you know, who would you rather have, Chris Ash or DJ Durkin? And one of the questions that kind of stemmed from that was the Chris Ash defense. Who actually ran it? Was it Luke Fickell? Was it Chris Ash? Does Chris Ash like to recruit? There was all this stuff. And so I'm giving you the floor now, because you worked firsthand with them firsthand won a national title. Give us the layout of that room, set the record straight. Luke Fickell and Chris Ash, what was it like?
Yeah, so I mean, Chris really ran the defense. Now, Luke was heavy. It's hard to say who ran the defense, right? If you have a cohesive staff like they had, which was they had phenomenal chemistry, a phenomenal staff. Like, no one really runs it. There's a guy that may make the final say in a disagreement, and there may be a guy who makes the final say on what play to call, right, during the game. But if you have a cohesive group, like I think about 2014. We had a very cohesive offensive group. Like, Tom Herman ran the show, but Ed Warner was heavily involved in the run game. I was heavily involved in the pass game. Like, and Urban was heavily involved. So it's like, whose offense was it? Well, it was really Urban's offense that Tom had a morph to, right? It morphed into something bigger with the no huddle, kind of the signaling. And then I brought in the one word stuff that has become famous because that's the only thing Ed Warner knew, because it was one word, like the tempo one word stuff where you just say jet read left and everyone knew what to do. That was kind of my baby, not to mention third down red zone game planning. And you know, when you have a comprehensive staff that is competent, everyone runs the show. Now, Chris was the final say. And honestly, Urban dictated the defense we were going to run. They just, you know, enhanced it. He came in and brought Chris in because Chris was a quarters guy. Chris was not a huge press quarters guy and not every snap like Michigan State, but Urban wanted to run Michigan State's defense. And Chris knew quarters so well that he was the guy that could lead the charge, right? Not only that, but Chris and Greg Schiano both really ran. They didn't run the corner room. Like, Kerry certainly ran it and coached it, but they taught Kerry what to teach, and they helped make Kerry learn how to develop a great press corner. Because if you look at 2012 and 2013, we weren't very good at corner. We had Bradley Roby, who was a great player, but those corners were not well coached, right? They became well coached once Chris Ash came in and really taught Kerry secondary play. At a high level, right? Kerry knew it at a good level, but Chris elevated Kerry's coaching ability, right? And then Greg Schiano came in and did the same. So that's why I kind of was critical about people say Kerry Combs is a great football coach. I'm like, well, he is a really good football coach. I'm not going to take that away from him, but by no means is he a scheme guy. And don't lose sight of the fact that other people assisted in developing those players. So that's not a knock on Kerry. Kerry now is really good at teaching press coverage, but he wasn't at one point. And that's just the development of a coach. So, yeah, and Luke was obviously heavily involved. I think Luke provided as much value as he learned, right, which is why you're watching Cincinnati do what they do now, because coaching is a fluid process, right? You're at this level, whatever that level is. It could be, you know, top five in the country, top 25. You could be top 50. But as development goes and you learn from other coaches, as long as you're not stubborn and egotistical like Ed Warner, you can learn and grow and become a top five position coach or coordinator in the country because it's development. So Chris ran the show. Luke was heavily involved. Kerry was heavily involved. And Larry Johnson was heavily involved in the front four. But Larry's never been a back end guy. He's always been a D-line coach, and there's none better than him. So that's kind of how the room was ran, to answer the question.
That's important. I think that should excite kind of anybody who's a fan of a young coach. Like obviously, like this goes for head coaches too. They will continue to get better. Like, Lincoln Riley's going to continue to get better. Ryan Day is going to continue to get better. Guys are going to get better because it's the same way. Like, when people talk about, like, when family therapists talk about, you know, what kids don't realize that their parents are growing up as they grow up. It's like what sometimes fans don't realize, or sometimes even players don't realize, is as these players are developing, the coaches are developing also. And it's important for kind of the success, because at the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things, college football is an arms race. It's how much do you know, how much can you improve, and how much talent can you put on the field. And those three things kind of dictate who wins championships. And that's kind of how dynasties are born. That's how dynasties are shut down. When someone gets caught, it's usually a lot of it to do with coach development and not only player development. I mean, obviously this year's Georgia team is a perfect example. Kirby Smart has traditionally not done a lot with kind of the most. They've been in the top three or top four of recruiting every single year, and they seem to fall short and not have any national titles. But obviously we've seen that Kirby Smart, a younger coach, is getting even better and developing. And so this is all, it's an arms race, it's a chase, and I think that's important. I do want to say, note on the Ohio State DC search, I think there's a part of me, kind of what I've read and kind of what I've heard from other people, it feels like Ryan Day may be looking to go kind of away from the Urban Meyer coaches tree. So I'm not sure we'll get Chris Ash or DJ Durkin, who obviously me and Zach love. But he may be trying to go either get an NFL guy or a certain, you know, Hemi Jimmy from down south at Oklahoma State. We'll find out more about that, and obviously we'll discuss more of it later. Jag 77 has a question. No, actually, I'm gonna start with Toast's question. 46, great names on the review side, by the way, everybody. He wants to know if we have a guess on where Spencer Rattler and Jack Miller will go. I'll take this one, Zach, just because I kind of follow those two pretty closely.
Yeah.
So I believe that Spencer Rattler will find his way to Oregon. I think there's a revenge factor. I think, you know, Oregon could use a dynamic quarterback. Well, with a quarterback with dynamic ability, obviously Spencer has some things that he has to clean up, because right now he's viewed not just by me and you, but by kind of the masses of college football as a cancer. And at quarterback, you cannot be viewed as a cancer or a me guy, because that is the point guard of the team. You cannot be a me guy. You need to be a we guy. And dating back for as long as I've followed Spencer, it's always been like that. When he was an AAU basketball star, it was like that. When he was on the QB1. Exactly.
Call it what it was. He was a complete douchebag.
Mm-hmm. You know, he was a douchebag, not just to his teammates, but also to fellow peers. I mean, there's that one clip, I don't know if you've seen it, about him kind of on the competition Wednesday in high school, just being a dick to the other quarterbacks. And then as an insult, he says like something like, Jack Miller's better than you at the end of the clip. And it's like, wait, how is that an insult? Like, Jack Miller's a hell of a high school quarterback. Like, why are you name dropping other Arizona guys? So I think that's interesting. I do not believe he ends up at Arizona State. And based off of what I've heard from a guy that I respect and is pretty plugged in with the Jack Miller thing, I think that he ends up at either Ole Miss. I know that Florida is kind of on his wish list. I know that Lincoln Riley recruited him, but you and I both agree, I think Jack Miller should go to Arizona today.
Well, yeah, the problem is and to steal a quote from someone who, you know, prophesized it but didn't live it. Tate Martell commented when Justin Fields was transferring in, don't swing and miss twice. And I think that sentiment is true, but Tate Martell swung, I think he's three strikes and you're out. But it's true. Like, Jack Miller to go to Ole Miss or Florida, I don't know, man. I mean, Lane Kiffin's going to bring in some really good quarterbacks, and and I've never been as high on Jack Miller as the recruiting services or fans. I think he's a solid quarterback that needs a lot of development. And so at a place like Arizona or Arizona State, I think he's that talented that he will be the guy and get developed. I think if he goes to Ole Miss or Florida, there's a chance he's not the guy, and then he's not going to get developed right. And so I think he could swing and miss twice, and that's what you don't want for the kid, because the kid could be a great player, but he's got to go to the right place, the right fit, and somewhere that's going to develop him and kind of put him in a position to be successful. Now, Arizona's awful. I would never go play for Jed Fish. He's a fucking clown. And that's the last place in the world I would go. But I think Arizona State's a great option. And there's other schools out west and other schools nationally that would love to have him that could do a great job. I mean, I'll tell you a great spot, and we probably could get into this right now. Steve Adazio was just fired at Colorado State, and Tony Alford is the leading candidate there. Now, they haven't reached out to Tony. That's not even in motion yet, as of last night, from the people I know at Colorado State, actually not from Tony, so don't go thinking Tony's like telling me anything about that. But if Tony Alford goes to Colorado State, I think that's a great type of fit, right? Let him go to Colorado State. He'll by far be the guy, and he'll have a familiar coach as a head coach who he knows, right? I'm sure Tony will bring some guys from the support staff that he will know if Tony gets the job, like Keenan Bailey would be one, and, you know, a couple guys. And so I think that would be my advice, is go to an Arizona State or even a Colorado State. He would kill it at Colorado State. And you can go to the you can go to the NFL from Colorado State. You can go to the NFL from anywhere. It's about the opportunity, the familiarity, and then the development, right? That's what it's all about. And so, and I think I agree with you on Spencer Rattler going to Oregon. And I think that's actually a really good fit, because Mario Cristobal will break that motherfucker so fast.
Absolutely.
And turn him into a dude. If or he's going to fail. But at least he won't be like Lincoln Riley, like tiptoeing around, walking on eggshells. Like Mario Cristobal punched that motherfucker right in the face, figuratively, not literally. And he'll have two options: like shut the fuck up and grind and become a great player, or be a little bitch and leave again. Right? That'll be his two options. So I really like that fit at Oregon for Spencer Rattler, because we all know he has tools.
Yeah. And one last thing on Jack Miller, where I would like to see him in a place that I think makes a lot of sense. I think he would be the guy at Cincinnati. Like, I think that he could go to Cincinnati and be the guy. And as someone who lives in Ohio, I would love that. I would love that for him.
That's a great spot for him to land.
And I think he would be the guy. So I, you know, a question that me and you talk about this one a lot. Jack77 wants to know, Zach, this one's for you. I won't touch this one. What are the odds of you getting back into the coaching game at any level?
I'm in the coaching game. I'll never get back in the coaching game where it controls my life or dictates anything. But I love coaching kids. I love developing kids athletically. I love impacting kids. So I kind of took a break from that just because I was trying to figure out my life. But I coach my son's sixth grade football team. I coach my daughter's travel softball team. I coach my son's travel baseball team. That's obviously a priority for me. My son's going to be in middle school. So, you know, if Hyatt's middle school and Olentangy wanted to get over the public narrative and get over an ex-wife that just, I mean, does everything in her power to harass people to not have me involved. If they wanted to make an impactful hire for kids, I would love to coach some middle school football. I mean, I'm not looking to get into coaching in a career sense anymore. I just love the impact it had on kids. And honestly, the sixth grade football team I coached, it was the most rewarding thing I've ever done because these kids got so much better and they learned football at such a high level for a sixth grader. And I mean, I just think about my quarterback, my center, you know, some of the players that we had and how much better they got. Mason, my quarterback, is a dog and he needs to get coached so much. And he could become a really great player. We had a slot receiver who was a baller. His name was Cooper. Like, I could go on forever, right? And we had a tight end, this kid named William that is, I mean, my God, if he just trains hard and stays down a good path, he'll be a Division I something, basketball or football player. So anyways, I'm going to be involved. I'm not going to ever get back into college coaching. You'll never read about me doing anything, you know, on a big stage, but I'm going to do that. And then a lot of this, not only the charity work that I'm doing with Zone 6, but I also am going to launch a Zone 6 platform that, you know, it has nothing to do with the charity, but it's going to be about athlete development. And I private train some kids that I, you know, friends, kids and things like that. So I'll always be involved because I love it. I have a passion for it, but I'll never get back into coaching.
Great
at a collegiate level.
Yeah. And this doesn't fit the narrative because you might be a good dude, man. Chill out. this is a question that we've kind of addressed a little bit, but I just want you to put it to bed. Finally, do you think the other three wide receivers, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, got the nod over a guy like Jameson Williams due to, you know, the fine tuned stuff with route running and blocking, or do you think it was more of a preference thing?
I would say that Jameson is the fourth best blocker of the four for sure. I don't think there's as high an emphasis on perimeter blocking within this offense and in Hartline's room as there was with Urban's. I mean, that's not even a knock on Hartline. You had to be ridiculous perimeter blockers under Urban. You had to, or else the coach was going to get fired and the kid wasn't going to play. I don't think that emphasis is that high, mainly because there's not a lot of perimeter run plays. Like we ran the perimeter like crazy, and now it's mostly bubble screens and stuff like that, which is still important. And I think they're pretty good blockers, but not like when Evan Spencer, Noah Brown, Terry McLaurin, those Paris Campbell, Austin you're Mack, talking yeah. about those guys never miss blocks ever. Like if they got their hands on you, that block was done. And so I think the receiver group is still asked to block, but I don't think the emphasis is placed there. So he's definitely the fourth best blocker as far as route runner. I think Hartline's Hartline's biggest strength. That in recruiting is teaching route running. Hartline was a great one himself, and he also took the approach to become an expert at it, you know, and supersede the coaching he got, not that he got bad coaching, but Hartline became an expert at route running because he was trying to make millions of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like I was trying to become a great route running coach. So my guys ran good routes. Hartline's trying to like pad his bank account. So he really, and he studied it all day long. So I think that Jameson is he's a great route runner. I think he's gotten even a ton better at Alabama. You can't tell me he's a bad route runner. You watch some of these routes he runs at Alabama, but I'm not saying he was better than the other three. I think it honestly was just twofold. Those three kids you mentioned are absolutely, and this is not going to be a knock on Jameson, but they are the type of player Hartline gels with and relates to, right? Where J-Mo was a little more rough, we'll say. And great kid. I mean, no negativity towards the kid. He was just a different type of kid than those three. So I think he didn't respond the same to Hartline. And And the reality is you have to coach every kid differently, right? You have to coach kids based on how they need to be coached to maximize themselves. And I think Heartline is more kind of a, this is how we do it. And this is how I coach. And if it doesn't mesh well, this might not work out, which is fine. There's a lot of coaches like that, but so I guess that's a long-winded answer to say yes and no.
Both of them. Okay. Both,
yeah. Right. But I think it's a great point. I think those three kids are great route runners. Their skill sets match perfectly with the positions they played. And so J-Mo would have had to play Chris Olave's position. And, you know, then it comes down to who's a better blocker, who takes coaching better, you know, stuff like that, that I think I've never been an advocate that he should have started over Chris Olave. I've always been an advocate that he could have been here and made a major impact as a fourth receiver and still got drafted in the first round, just like you watched Alabama do. That's been my contention. So I guess that's my stance on it.
Hey, that's fair. I mean, I'm kind of of the same mindset. I thought that once they moved Garrett inside, they should have left him there maybe for a little bit longer and then or run, you know, had all four receivers be contributors. We've seen it done before, and we're going to see it done again at some point, maybe not by Ohio State. And this is the last question I want to get to. And, guys, we go through the questions. We look for them. And if things we've addressed, we'll kind of steer away from it. But things that we do want to hit. Ryan 19 had a question. This is a good one because I'm curious. While you were at Ohio State, Zach, was there ever a game, or even when you were at Florida, was there ever a game that you went into feeling like you guys were going to lose?
No. Not at Florida and Ohio State. I mean, I take that back. Our first year at Florida, we weren't very good. Mm-hmm. We played Alabama, got boat raced with Tyrone Prothrow and what was his name? Brody Croyle. Well, I forget the quarterback's name, but they were loaded. So there was maybe a game or two, but that was my first year in coaching. So I wasn't really that heavily involved. I just was kind of wide eyed, taking it all in, trying to learn. But that first year at Florida, there was a couple games for sure where you're like, geez, I don't know if we can, I don't think we have a chance to win this one. But after that, no, never. Never. I mean,
what about that Alabama Ohio State game? What was your confidence level out of 10 going into that game?
Oh, you know, it's Alabama. So my confidence level was a 10 out of 10. Not that we would win, but that we could win. You know, you get in a game like that, and you're going to win the game if you protect the football, don't turn it over, make big plays, tackle well, no mental errors, and go hard. So many of those things are fluid. Like, we could have lost to Alabama if we'd have turned it over three times easily. So, and a lot of times, you know, that is coaching, but it's out of your control when it comes when you're going into the game. So,
once the bullets start flying, I mean, you can't.
Yeah, stop and you know, you find out that you didn't coach it hard enough when it happens. Like, you always think you've been coaching ball security really well until you fumble four times and you're like, what the fuck? I fucked that up. So
during the Bama prep, was there a moment that you felt like, oh wait, we found something, like we can expose this, or wait, our guys are just better? Or was it just kind of, you know, we're just going to get in the ring, go toe to toe and let the punches start flying?
Yeah. You know what? It was 3 years, a 3 year process. And you know, I can just speak to my group. It was a 3 year process of developing my guys, where once we went into 2014, we got through a couple games. I was like, this is the best receiver group in the country. And honestly, after that, it was just everyone was starving, like drooling every day to get better, to learn. I talked about earlier, competence and feeling like they're getting better. Those fucking kids would walk in my meeting like just laser focus, ready to get it. And they had a dog mentality, which is the biggest thing that I think I brought to the room when I created Zone 6 and kind of created that camaraderie, is they had a dog mentality. So when I watched the film, I never saw a corner that we were afraid of. I never saw a secondary that I was like, I don't know. I mean, they had fucking Landon Collins, Cyrus Jones. They had like four NFL starters in the secondary. And I walked in the game like they're about to get fucked up. Mm-hmm. And they did.
Well, that oozed over because Devin Smith said something about Landon Collins basically being the most overrated safety in the country kind of right before that game. And me as a, you know, I was a fan. I was like, just still a kid at this point, didn't really know much about anything in terms of football related. I mean, the most tape I got was from Chris Woolley, who was the St. B quarterback when LeBron was there, kind of trying to go through and teach me film. But other than that, like I was kind of nervous when he said that about Landon Collins. I was like, at that kind of moment, I either felt like you guys were just overconfident and overcompensating, or that, holy shit, Zach and them have found something that they like.
Well, and yeah, I mean, that goes to, you know, it's all about NFL projections. Landon Collins projected the first safety off the board. Like, this is like that kid at Michigan, that Daxton Hill and the other kid. I mean, they're projected like these, and you watch the film and you're like, these kids get beat a lot. Like, I mean, they might be talented players, but I'm not worried about them. And you saw Ohio State's receivers kind of handle business against Michigan secondary, you know, albeit it wasn't a good game, but they didn't have a problem getting open. So it all comes down to film study, and it all comes down to the mentality of your group. So no, never. I think the only game in my career And I was an arrogant young coach, so I didn't believe we would lose. But when I was at Marshall, my very first game as a position coach was in the Horseshoe against Ohio State. And they were loaded. I mean, that was the year their only loss was to Wisconsin, and they ended up beating Arkansas in the Sugar Bowl. It was the year that they vacated all their wins. So really, yeah, we won the game. So fuck you guys.
Was that the Terrell Pryor year?
Yeah, the Terrell Pryor year. So haha.
What'd you think of him?
The last laugh comes to Marshall and Coach Smith over here, because I thought we could win, and though we didn't, in the end, we did.
Okay, yeah, it's the long game, baby. What were your thoughts on Terrell Pryor, though? Kind of watching him firsthand.
He's a big athlete. Yeah, I mean, he was not a great quarterback. Athlete. He was just a big athlete. I mean, and a freaky, freaky athlete. We had a linebacker, Mario Harvey, who played in the NFL for a while, who was a big hitter. He could really run. He was a 4.4 kid at Marshall. And he hit Terrell Pryor on the sideline one time and bounced off of him. And I was like, holy shit. Like, this kid runs through people, and he bounced off Terrell Pryor. I was like, oh my God, right in front of me on the sideline. And Terrell Pryor is a monster. I mean, he looked like a D end when he's standing next to you. I mean, his legs are like as big as my two legs put together.
Yeah, so, I think he's all 6'5", 6'6". Wait, who's a better athlete? Him or Terrence Gibson?
Oh, Terrence Gibson's the freakiest athlete. One of the freakiest that I've seen. Terrell was more freaky because of his size. Like, he was able to do things at his size that were freaky. Torrance was just, I mean, different.
I think Torrance was definitely more twitchy, I think.
Oh, for sure. Faster, more twitchy. I mean, but again, Terrell Pryor was doing that at 235 pounds, whatever he weighed.
His college basketball highlights were absolutely outrageous. Zach, it's championship weekend. I don't want to overshadow or step on anything you have for the main show, obviously, because like you said, it's gonna be a banger. Obviously, the one game you had circled a couple weeks ago is the Houston-Cincinnati game, and then obviously Georgia-Alabama, which you're gonna break down absolutely in depth. Championship weekend's fun. It's gonna suck not having a team to root for, a team to watch. I've kind of asked the page or ask so-and-so about a scenario for Ohio State to get in. I'm not going to do that to myself. I don't think that there's enough chaos.
In my opinion, that's the last thing an Ohio State fan should want.
Absolutely. Because you should not want it.
There's a lot to be fixed, and you don't want this team having to go in as a 4 seed and face Alabama. And that could change recruiting. That could change your off season. If they get beat by 21 points to a Georgia team, I think you really want to catch the Rose Bowl. Go, kind of avenge yourself against Oregon, and
that's really cool that we can get a chance to.
That'd be great. The Rose Bowl, there's not a bowl game. It's the only big bowl game I've never coached in, and it's different from what I hear. But I will tell you before we get out of here, Chris, it's going to be on my main show, but I want to get it out before the odds change. Our my bookie parlay of the weekend is $200 to win $300. Right, it's a 3-leg parlay. I'm usually really big on 2-leg parlays because 3 are hard to hit, like you saw last night. The fucking Predators ruined my world because the Cowboys won, TCU won, and then the Predators just shit the bed at home. And I should have taken that damn hockey game. But I'm taking Georgia to win the SEC championship, Michigan to win the Big Ten championship, Oklahoma State to win the Big 12 championship, $200 to win $300. That's a 3-leg parlay. And if you want to throw another one in, I don't trust the Wake Pitt game. I think Oregon wins tonight, but I don't trust it. Not enough to bet a dollar on it. So that's where I'm at. And then Cincinnati should win, but it's not worth the juice. They're such high favorites. I think Houston has a chance. It's not worth throwing it in the parlay, but you do you. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, Georgia, Michigan, Okie State, that's my parlay. And if you want some great prop bets, I'm telling you right now, I have one of the handicappers on our team. All he does all day long is sits and studies numbers to give out props. And this fucker is on fire. He's amazing. It's worth the price of our Menace to Pick subscription by itself. If you just bet the props, he's on outstanding. So if you want to check that out, check out Menace to Picks on Twitter, Instagram, on Patreon, whatever, or don't take my parlays and win money most of the time. Sometimes right now I was hot until we lost last night. So we got to get back to our winning ways.
I said 2 months ago, Zach, that I expect Utah to beat Oregon twice, so we'll see if that second one hits. I almost don't want it to happen though, because I want to play Oregon again as an Ohio State fan. Dog, that's what I got. Great shows this week. Help get this show inside the top 100. Share, like it up, leave a review, do all that. Help us so we can unleash more Menace content. But with that, Zach, I have nothing left. Menace out.
Wake up. Menace Nation, it's Menace morning time.
Wake them up, wake them up, wake them up, wake them up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera,
hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big,
couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on egg today.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the race.
I shoot
a
shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial.